now heard on 95.3 and AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
And last but certainly not least, we have Canine Jax. He's a 1.5-year-old Belgian Malinois. His handler is Sergeant James Parson, who is not here today, but Officer Abed is ably filling in with Jax today. And Jax was actually donated by Sergeant Parsons to the department. And Jax, you may, if you've been around for a little bit, if you remember Canine Giannis, who was very photogenic, took lots of pictures. Jax is Canine Giannis' son. And Jax will be dual certified in narcotics detection and tracking.
So there you go. That was the announcement yesterday. 4 new canine officers for the Pensacola Police Department. And that was Deputy Chief Kevin Christman there doing the introduction. Of course, the man who was kind of beside himself with giddiness to see all the dogs introduced yesterday was Mayor D.C. Reeves. He joins us now. Mayor, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Thank you. Their approval rating will always be higher than mine. So I really respect that.
You know, as long as you go in knowing that, right? You know that's the case, then you're all good, right?
That's absolutely right.
No, that was a really good day yesterday to have 4 new canines introduced, and you know, to see that, you know, it saves on, it brings all kinds of benefits to the table, and you know, it's something that they only serve for what, like 2 years, 3 years, something like that, typically.
Yeah, I remember exactly, but it's not for long. Yeah, it's not a very long. They're all about, as you heard, all about a year and a half old.
Yep.
And remember, I mean, these are, and of course, 2 of these were donated privately. I mean, this is a $12,000 to $15,000 investment. This is not, you know, the same as at your house. I mean, for all the training that it takes, you know, to put them in the field and put them truly in a line of fire, and to not only keep us safe, but to keep, you know, their handler, co-pilot safe, there's a lot of training that goes into that and a lot of time, you know, and investment. So not just financially. So excited to get them all out there. They've been on for about a month or so.
You know, one of the other things I wanted to talk with you about is the approval has been given to begin the Pensacola Motor Lodge inspections and negotiations. But I guess DEO, the Department of Economic Opportunity, was here in town. Is that yesterday that you guys were working with them?
Yeah, so you may recall there's been 2 different projects. This is all Hurricane Sally money, post-Sally resiliency type money. Well, the first bucket of about $66 million, 80% of which has to go to Escambia or Santa Rosa, so call it $50 million has to go there. And this is to make us more resilient, you know, to repair things that were broken during Sally and to make sure that if we were hit by another hurricane, we were in a better position than we were. And so this happens around the state with, you know, different storms. And so you may recall Hollis T. Williams is our big ask, $36.4 million. And then we had about $10 million at the port and about $5 million for Fricker Center over there just off Cervantes near Battis Hospital. So fortunately, all 3 of those had enough validity in their eyes that they came and did on-site inspections of all 3, as well as the second bucket, which is neighborhood revitalization. And we put in 3, 2 of those made it through to inspection, to an on-site as well. And that was $5 million for the potential demo or acquisition of Baptist Hospital and $2.8 million to revitalize Brownsville. And it was honestly in the spirit of potentially acquiring this property. I told DEO, I said, you know, we're putting our money where our mouth is. If you're not sure if we believe in this $2.8 million to help revitalize all those storefronts and try to bring life back to the commercial corridor of Cervantes and Brownsville, we're putting our money where our mouth is. We put $1 million up whether this happens or not right now. So, you know, hopefully I think that spoke volumes to them that we're invested in that idea as well.
Were they persuaded at all, or did they seem receptive to the idea that, look, FDOT just put all of this money into the revamping of Cervantes with an effort to slow traffic, calm traffic, protect pedestrians, whether that's successful or not, it's a different conversation, whether it was a good project or not. But they've done this already. Therefore, see, we are buying this motor lodge. See, we're investing in this. We have a confluence of entities trying to work on this area. Did that seem persuasive to them?
Yeah, well, and remember, obviously, with the state road, you know, a lot of the nuance of our ask in Brownsville, it doesn't necessarily involve anything curb to curb because it is a state road.
Sure.
But I will tell you, I have apprised Philip Gaynor and FDOT of that we were putting this in, you know, because it does, it's on both sides of the state road, you
right.
know, just to make sure that, you know, we're good partners on that. But look, I think with anything, I mean, this is significant dollars that if I'm the DEO, I'm looking for this to be transformational. And that's why I always talk about Hollis T. Williams from a pure infrastructure water, stormwater position, just that. I mean, we all know all of the problems we had down there for decades. I mean, the first conversation about Hollis T. Williams started in 2004. I mean, this has been 20 years. We know all the flooding that happens in that Gillimard, you know, Tarragona
yeah.
area. And we take on water from the county that comes north down to us. Any of that flooding downtown, any has something to do directly or indirectly with the lack of stormwater infrastructure under the interstate. So, you know, these are vital projects. And that's what I tried to relay. That we had all our technical experts. But, you know, as the mayor, I'm saying, look, the things that we've asked you about, the things that we want to put these much needed dollars into, one, we wouldn't normally afford in our budget. These opportunities don't come along often. And two, they truly could have impactful generational change for us. And that's what I think that they want to see. And that's what I hope that they're persuaded by.
Well, it always sounds good if you're a potential investor to hear, yeah, this is going to be a big end result. You're going to like how this all turns out. We're talking to Mayor D.C. Reeves. Mayor, hang on for just a second. Let's get Candy in here with traffic on the fives.
And not showing any slowdowns or delays right now. Certainly use caution wherever you are. And I said the old Baptist Hospital earlier, not the old West Florida Hospital. I know it's a little slow there as people are making their way into work, but it always is. A little slow on Avalon, too. It looks southbound. It looks like that's been cleared up for the most part, but a little slow as you're heading towards I-10 on Avalon southbound. That's it. If you have traffic tips, 437-1620, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Thanks so much, Candy. Back to Mayor D.C. Reeves. You also talked about your trip over to D.C., Washington, D.C., where you were working on talking to people, working on getting the airport terminal approved, $65 to $70 million in funding there, about a third from the feds, third from the state, a third from us through bonding. That all makes sense to me. I have a slightly different question about that project, though, which is I had thought the issue we were really facing right now at the airport was parking and ramp space. And I know we've talked about parking in the past, and that's pretty pressing as well, but ramp space for all of these planes that want to sit overnight in between their flights, basically, how will ramp space, and I assume some of that's going to go away with a new terminal, how will that problem be solved? Do you have an answer for that yet?
Well, look, we have an entire capital improvement plan that certainly we're ready to absorb any of the quote-unquote growing pains that would come with the additional gates. What we know right now is the thing that is the most out of our control of the two things you mentioned and new service and more direct flights is the lack of gates. Within that plan, I mean, understand this is certainly beyond my expertise and more in the mats, but what I do know is there is a lot of communication and collaboration amongst the carriers and our airport in terms of what parking's available, what you charge for parking, the fees within the airport, outside the airport. There's a lot of hand-holding that happens collectively because it kind of makes sense, right? If Delta's going to have X number of flights here or American's going to have X number of flights, they want to make sure that the infrastructure is there for that experience to go well from the time they park the car.
Absolutely.
So all of those things are anticipatory as part of not only just the ask of this terminal, which is the big one, but we're looking at other things. I was talking to FAA folks and advocating. We have a grant in right now for a potential, I think it's about a $4 million, excuse me, maybe it's a $12 million solar canopy that would actually produce about 20% of the power of the airport. That would, and then it would also protect the surface lot and make it and put it under shade. We're looking at those opportunities all the time. So, yeah, I don't want to make it sound like all we're looking at is this gate.
Sure.
We have a multi-year capital plan that would help absorb any of this growth.
And it even made me ask the question, I don't know the answer to the question, is, you know, do we even have adequate land? Like, you know, I know some of the, there's been elements of the land, like the medical park out on the, on 12th or the, you know, the sacred part down to the south a little bit. Like just, you know, it seems like maybe we're being constrained in even as we're trying to grow, and maybe grow up is kind of the way we're going to have to do it. Different question that I had for you is, and I thought this is interesting, that there's going to be a stop sign going at Roos and Government. Fine, four-way stops are better than two-way, I get that. Jefferson and Government, you're studying that one by Seville Quarter. Oh my, that is one of the worst intersections from a, like, as a driver, I always feel unsafe. And going any direction through that intersection, I always feel unsafe. So please, yes, four-way stop there.
Well, look, I love to be a data nerd and look at all that. And of course, we go do that. We study these things. There's a lot of ramifications about, you don't just go willy-nilly and go pick up, you know, and the mayor thinks that there should be a four-way stop here and you do it.
Right.
You know, our public works team, who works really hard on a lot of things, they go and study that for many reasons. Not just is it valid or not, because it's worth the, you know, the couple dollars to put stop signs in.
Right.
There's a lot of other ramifications, where the traffic flows, where does it go now that there's a four-way stop. And but what I'll tell you is sometimes it's simplistic, the way you just described it, Andrew. It's, I know that when I'm at those two four-way stops, people stop when they shouldn't anyway, and
right.
and everyone thinks it's a four-way stop. So, I mean, I know that's the opposite of data, but that's kind of really how the conversation started, was to say, I mean, these are two intersections that are two-way stops, but, I mean, I would venture to guess, I don't know, an enormous portion of people that have the right-of-way that do not have to stop anyway,
right.
Which makes it probably as unsafe as anything.
And I know specifically at the one at Jefferson is the view lines are so bad because of the offset to the street.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just a weird intersection. And, you know, I was very encouraged to hear that you guys are looking at that one for a possibility. We always like to end on the lightning round. First question for you is, when it comes to milkshakes, I'm hoping you like milkshakes. Do you eat vanilla milkshakes? And what is your favorite milkshake flavor?
I do eat vanilla milkshakes, and I would actually say vanilla is my thing. Is that not very fun?
I
don't know. Should it be something?
Sorry, yeah. I know Candy likes vanilla milkshakes too, and we had a big argument yesterday about this. By the way, my fault for saying nobody eats a milkshake; they drink it. But okay, fine. Second, and we'll find out which side of the happy line we are on here. When it comes to your cornbread, does your cornbread have sugar or not have sugar in it?
I mean, you know, I'm so healthy, you know, that I watch my figure, that I would say no sugar if you were offering me one of the two. But,
does your mouth prefers the
honestly,
no sugar, or your waistline prefers
way,
the no sugar?
Right. Yeah. Excuse me. Did I not delineate between those
gotcha.
Two? Yeah.
All right. And
yeah, fair assessment.
Last one. When you brush your teeth, water first, toothpaste first, or no water at all?
You're making me think about this. I only brush teeth left-handed. That's one of my weird things.
Okay, weird.
I go toothpaste first. Toothpaste first.
And you use water.
Yeah. Yeah. Then water. Yes.
Okay.
Then water.
Right.
Yeah.
This is gonna be our fun topic.
I'm not that crazy. I definitely got water on there.
All right, I'm going to give you an early plug for our conversation later and tell you this. I've tried it with the no water way, which is what the experts recommend, and it's actually kind of interesting. So give it a try and tell me what you think. D.C. Reeves is the mayor of Pensacola. He joins us every Wednesday at this time. Mr. Mayor, thanks for all the work you're doing to make the city better. I appreciate it, and certainly for the time spent this morning. We'll talk to you next week.
Of course, guys. I'll give it a shot. Thanks so much.
Hey, you never know till you try it. 7:50.